Welcome back to another episode of The Political Life. The state legislative sessions are winding down across the country. And when I looked at the map, I thought, well, what state would be interesting to hear from? And once again, Georgia popped up on the map. There's obviously other interesting states, Ohio. J.D. Vance just won the Republican primary there. We could obviously go to Ohio. But I decided to go to Georgia because it was, the center of the universe in the last presidential election. And it is still one of the centers of the political universe today. And there are some primaries going on. And we're going to get an update. And we're going to get an update from Eric Tannenblatt. And Eric is a principal at Denton's, and Eric has been on the show before, but I just want to tell you a little bit about Eric before we bring him on. Eric is the global chair of the public policy and regulation at Denton's, and Denton's, as I've said in the past, is incredibly the world's largest law firm. He also leads the firm's U.S. public policy practice. And he's been doing this for over at Denton's and other places for over with 3 decades. And he also heads up, they have a 50-state practice, which Eric heads up. And we here are part of that network, part of that practice. He has served in the administration of 3 U.S. presidents as senior advisor to U.S. senators and governors. He has a particular interest and skill working with disruptive companies and industries through the very complicated laws and regulations that we have. And he often writes and speaks about the innovation economy. And one of those areas that he does that is in the, what I will call, he may correct me, I can't ever remember if it's the self-driving cars or the autonomous vehicles, but he writes, I think it's a weekly digest on the autonomous vehicles. And you can find those articles, I think, on his on the webpage on Denton's under his name. They're really quite well done. But Eric also served as chief of staff to the former governor, Sonny Perdue, in Georgia. So having Eric on today could not be better. He has deep, deep roots in Georgia, has been involved in Republican politics there for a very long time. Sonny Perdue, you may not know, he was the first Republican governor in Georgia in 130 years when he won. Eric also, which I'm going to ask him about, he helped coordinate the 2004, every year, and Eric will tell us, the G8 Economic Summit was hosted by President George W. Bush in 2004, hosted in Sea Island, Georgia. And Eric helped coordinate that summit, which had to be an incredible undertaking. He served, he's been a political advisor and co-chairman, financial co-chairman for the former governor Mitt Romney and now U.S. Senator, who he has known since 2004. And he has also worked very closely with the Republican Governors Association. And I could really just go on and on and on. So Eric, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks, Jim. Glad to be with you.
Yeah, well, it is. I'm so glad to have you. So I thought we'd break this down into 2 parts. We'll talk about the Georgia legislative session that just wrapped up, and then we'll jump into the politics, which everyone is going to want to hear about. But before we get into that, what was it like helping to coordinate the G8 summit? And how often do the G8 countries get together?
Well, the countries rotate. So every year, one of the member countries, their leader would host the summit in their country. So in 2004, George W. Bush was the president. He selected Sea Island, Georgia, which actually has, there's some connection there in that George H.W. Bush and Barbara Bush honeymooned in Sea Island. You also, when you host one of these events, just because of the world leaders that are present, you want to do it in a location that can be secure. And if you think back, 2004 was not too long after September 11th, 2001. So security was a top priority, and as it obviously should be. So Sea Island is an island off the coast of Georgia. There's a very famous hotel, the Cloister Hotel, and it was just an ideal location. They used Savannah, Georgia, Fort Stewart, and Hunter Army Airfield as the location where the world leaders would land, and then they helicoptered them to Sea Island, and they basically locked down the island. The only people that were allowed on the island were, there's a number of residents, and you basically were stuck there, and then it was all gated. But it was an incredible experience. It's something that's run by the State Department and the federal government. I had, as you mentioned, was Sonny Perdue's first chief of staff. And when I left his office, he asked, we had started working with the feds on the summit while I was in the office. And he just said, would you mind continuing the work on that? And so he, you know, tapped me, the state coordinator. And so I was basically the link between the state government and the federal government in putting it on. And it was just a fascinating, you know, now that I'm talking about it, Vladimir Putin was there. I mean, he was part of it at the time.
Wow. Yeah.
And each of the world leaders had golf carts, gym carts that were made with the flags of their country. And Vladimir Putin was riding his gym car on Sea Island. It's it's hard to believe looking back on it now.
That's incredible. Boy, it must have been fun to be involved in helping bringing that together.
Yeah. The other thing that occurred right during the summit was Ronald Reagan died. And so at the end of I think they cut the summit short by a day because a number of the world leaders were going to his funeral. And that actually allowed some of the world leaders stayed after the summit ended waiting to go to the funeral. And we had, as you probably know, Jim, when you have these big events or these big political events, all the people that work on it, they have a wheels up party. When the plane takes off, everyone then has a big giant party to celebrate the end. And so we had this big party planned on the beach. And then Ronald Reagan passes, and some of the world leaders decided they were going to stay prior to the funeral, going to the funeral. And we couldn't figure out, well, do we delay our wheels up party? And the leaders that stayed said, no, go ahead and do it. We'll come. So I have this great picture. I'm looking at it right now of having a beer with Tony Blair on the beach.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's
he was a great guy, just a real down-to-earth guy.
Oh, that's incredible. And so what was it like you actually got to go to Sea Island during the summit?
Yeah, well, we were, because of the role I played, we were around it. We didn't go to attend any of the meetings. The meetings the leaders.
Yeah.
Condoleezza Rice was there with President Bush. The First Lady was there. And First Ladies have a separate schedule. And then each of the world leaders get to take one person. In the case of President Bush, it was Condoleezza Rice. And I'm not sure if she was there. At that time, she was his national security advisor or secretary of state, one of the two. Mm-hmm. And then some of the Bush staff. But we were more on the periphery of the actual meeting while the meeting was taking place.
But you were there helping with logistics and all that.
Yeah. And you have to raise, we raised private dollars too. We formed a host committee. And so we did at the very, before the official proceeding started, President and Mrs. Bush hosted a reception for the host committee. And so we brought the host committee through the donors, through all the security to have a big thank you event. And so that was nice.
So the G8 summit doesn't have a budget to pay for its own annual events?
Well, it does. But, you know, you want to, the host, in this case, President Bush, wants to, you know, do
add
some nice things.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We had nice things put in the rooms, but all that stuff takes money.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Eric. Well, thank you for the update on that. Now let's talk about the Georgia legislative session that just wrapped up. I'm sure Georgia, like so many states, are flush with money. Money seems to be everywhere. What were some of the focus, whether it passed or not, of the legislature this past session?
Yeah, so our legislature, we're only in 40 days. There's obviously breaks during the week, but we finished about a month ago. And it was one of the more productive legislative sessions that I've witnessed in my years, I think because it's an election year. And it was a really good session for the governor, who's up for re-election. So it all worked out well. We, like every other state, have received a lot of federal dollars, but I would say that Governor Kemp deserves a lot of credit for being the first governor to reopen our state after everything shut down for COVID. And you may remember, even President Trump was critical of him, but Governor Kemp really had to sort of balance. He talks about, you know, the balance of lives and livelihoods. We had a lot of small businesses that were really struggling. A lot have not come back. And he had to make a decision, or he made the decision, to slowly open up our state. And while at the time he was criticized from some, I think it allowed for us as a state to recover a lot quicker than other states. And so not only did we get all this federal money, but our economy kicked in and started to roar. And we ended our last fiscal year with a surplus. So we entered this legislative session with a surplus. And that's not even talking about the federal money. And it has allowed the governor to basically, well, he's accomplished everything he said he was going to do when he ran the first time. And one significant piece is, and it's an important voting block too, our teachers. Teacher salaries were low. He promised when he ran the last time that he was going to give each teacher a $5,000 pay raise. And so in his first year in office, he did a portion of that. And I think his plan was, over the 4 years, was going to fulfill that promise. Well, when COVID hit, we didn't know what the future had in store. So he was not able to give the additional pay raise during those years. But this year, he completely fulfilled the promise. He was able to give government workers who had not had a pay raise in a number of years, beyond just teachers, a pay raise, and continue investments in broadband. We were investing in expanding broadband throughout the state even before the federal broadband money was sent down. So it just allowed us to accelerate the efforts. You know, Georgia is the largest state east of the Mississippi. A lot of people don't realize that. And while we have population centers like Atlanta, Savannah, Augusta, Macon, and Columbus, the rest of the state's very rural. So we have a large portion of the state that did not have access to the internet. And so we still do, but we're making great strides, and the governor and his team get a lot of credit for that. Our legislative session also allowed for the governor to give a significant tax credit to everyone, again, because of the surplus that we have. So all Georgia taxpayers are getting a tax credit. More recently, it happened during the legislative session, but he also gave a gas tax holiday, given what's going on in the Ukraine and Russia and the increasing gas prices, to provide some relief to taxpayers. And then we had, you know, some other major pieces of legislation that passed, probably from a social standpoint. One of the more significant pieces of legislation that had bipartisan support was in the area of mental health. This was a big initiative of our Speaker of the House and supported by the governor and lieutenant governor. But we put a significant amount of money into mental health programs, working with the police department for treatment in the schools, to put counselors in schools, because, you know, Georgia's not different from other states, but, you know, I think a lot of people are struggling with the mental health issues. So that was made a priority. You know, we're also a strong Second Amendment state. So there was a constitutional carry bill. And that was something the governor promised when he ran the first time, and he was able to fulfill that promise. And we've done stuff to, you know, the lieutenant governor was a big proponent of getting foster care legislation passed to help foster kids, especially those that age out of the foster care system, again, with support of the governor and the speaker. And then another big issue is crime and public safety. And that's something that every, you know, state and city's, you know, struggling with. During COVID, we saw an increase, a spike in crime, backlog in the court system. And so our legislature and the governor, you know, passed a number of measures to try and address some of the issues related to public safety and crime. So it was a very productive session. I think that all of the lawmakers, the governor in particular, have a lot to be proud of and are taking full advantage of it on the campaign trail as we approach our primary.
Well, you know, for those listening, you can now see why Eric is so good at what he does. That was a phenomenal overview of the legislative session off the cuff. He's not reading it. That was great. I have so many follow-up questions. So if you know the tax credit, is it based on the income tax? Is it based on the child tax credit? What's it?
The income tax rate was cut, and it's going to be in stages, but they cut it down. I think it's going to end at like 4.9%.
Oh, so he actually cut the income tax.
Cut the income tax.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. And then the foster care legislation, did it just make it easier to adopt, or what, provide some funding? Or
no, you know, it provided funding, but you know, one of the challenges in the foster care system, and it's not just unique to, although some states have addressed this issue, is that when a foster child ages out, when they turn 18, you know, you want to help them go off to college, but then they're out of the foster care system. And so there's this period of time where, you know, kids that are with their parents or a parent, you know, even if they go to college or they go out in the workforce, they still have a parent. Mm-hmm. And so these foster kids are aging out of the foster care system, and there's no sort of safe, not safety net, but they don't have coaches, mentors. And so there was legislation passed to do that. And interesting, and we've done this for a number of areas requiring additional resources. In addition to what I was talking about, foster care, we have a rural health crisis. We have a lot of rural hospitals that have been closing down, mm-hmm. and there's challenges in terms of funding. And then with the public safety issue, you know, we have police departments that are having, you know, struggling from a resource, having revenue to do some of the things that they need to do. And so our Lieutenant Governor, Jeff Duncan, who unfortunately is not running for re-election this year, back when he was a legislator, he passed this rural health tax credit where individuals and companies can contribute to a rural hospital and get a tax credit on your state income tax. And the same thing, he did this for public safety this year. And so you can contribute to a police department or a connected foundation to a police department and get a tax credit. And it's a great way for, if someone wants to do something to help one of these areas, they can get some benefit by the state providing that tax credit. And so you're starting to see that in a number of areas.
That's very interesting. Yeah, and we are seeing the many states are dealing with the crime, and many states are dealing with surpluses and all this money. That's a very, very interesting approach, giving the teachers the raises. And so Georgia and politics, you mentioned the governor. The governor, who is widely popular, has been widely popular, found himself in the middle of the presidential controversy with President Trump, and now faces a primary challenge from the former U.S. Senator Perdue, who lost to now Senator Warnock. And
actually, John Ossoff. He lost.
Oh, John. Right. You're right.
Billy Loeffler lost to Warnock.
Right. You're right. Thank you. And so now Perdue is aligned with the former president, Trump, and Kemp is incredibly, at least from an outsider, facing this challenge. You just said, gave us an update on the legislative session, and Governor Kemp had a very successful session, and now he heads into the primary. The primary, I think, ends, you told us, May 24th. Early voting began on May 2nd, so the early voting has begun. As we're having this conversation, J.D. Vance just won his primary in Ohio. So tell us about this race and this. It's incredible that Georgia is once again in ground zero of the political universe.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, our state, you know, played a key role in, you know, the makeup of the United States Senate. And for when we lost the two Republican Senate races, or those Senate seats, the majority flipped to the Democrats. And now you have Democratic majorities in the Congress and in the United States Senate. So, and you have a Democrat in the White House. So that has really impacted, had national implications. And, you know, Georgia for the last, I guess, 20 years now has had, well, at least, you know, Paul Coverdale was elected in 92. And then we elected Johnny Isaacson, I think it was 2006. So we've had two Republican senators, although some can say that when Zell Miller was appointed as senator by Roy Barnes back in 2000, when Coverdale passed, even though he was a Democrat, he sort of voted more like a Republican. But yeah, we have definitely impacted the national political landscape. And, you know, we have a Senate race this year. Raphael Warnock was filling out the unexpired term of Johnny Isaacson, who retired early. And so now that seat is up. So we have a Senate contest. We're going to talk a little bit about that in a moment. And I think David Perdue, when he got in the race back in December, said that he believed that the Republican Party in Georgia was not unified and that he would be able to unify the Republican Party so that come November, Stacey Abrams, who will be the Democratic nominee, can be defeated. And whoever the Senate nominee is likely to be Herschel Walker would get elected to the Senate, and that then the Republicans can regain the majority in the United States Senate. We have never had, as far as I know, in either party, a challenge to an incumbent governor in their party, from their party. So this is very unique. I don't really understand the logic, though, if the thought is that the party won't be unified for the general election, so therefore he has to challenge the incumbent governor, how that unifies the party. Because what we have seen over the last several months is a bit of a civil war within our own, within the Republican Party in Georgia. Governor Kemp, you know, we talked about the last legislative session, but he has been a good governor and he has, you know, led the state through some tough times over the last 3.5 years. And I think Georgia voters appreciate the job that he's done. He also, after the 2020 election, which I should note, Governor Kemp was a big supporter out there pounding the pavement for President Trump's reelection, mm-hmm. for David Perdue's reelection, and for Kelly Loeffler. And the outcome, it didn't work out the way a lot of people wanted. And, you know, there were a lot of challenges with every election. You always have allegations of some funny business with the election. And, you know, we had some issues, but there were a lot of court challenges and they were all thrown out. And our elections in our state are governed by our Secretary of State and our state election board. It's not something that the governor has any control over. And for whatever reason, the former president and now Senator Perdue want to hold Governor Kemp accountable for the outcome of the November election, which is really not fair. I mean, Governor Kemp wasn't on the ballot. Those gentlemen were. And so it's unfair. They claim they wanted him to call a special session of the legislature in December to throw out to decertify the election and to throw out the electors that were duly elected. Governor Kemp, I should note, prior to being governor, was Secretary of State of Georgia. So he understands Georgia's election law. And I think in addition to being a good governor, I think one of the things that people really appreciate about Governor Kemp is that he is adhering to the Constitution and believes in the rule of law. And he's not going to, you know, basically fall to pressure, even from the former president. And what that has done is really turned this election between David Perdue and Brian Kemp into a contest where one person's talking about the past and David Perdue and wanting to relitigate 2020. And the other, Governor Kemp, is talking about the future and building on his record, successful record, I might add, as we look to the future. And I think you're seeing that in at least the all the polls that I've seen have Governor Kemp almost 20 points up. Unlike Ohio, where you have a 30% threshold, which is why J.D. Vance won last night, in Georgia, you have to get 50% plus one. So we have this runoff rule in place. So, and if you don't get over, if no candidate gets over 50%, the top two candidates are in a runoff. And there are three other candidates in the governor's race. None of them have the resources or name ID, but you know, all they need to do is to gobble up a few percentage points. And if, as the race tightens, it could push Governor Kemp and Senator Perdue into a runoff. And in fact, in the November 2020 election, when Senator Perdue was running against John Ossoff, now Senator Ossoff, Senator Perdue had just fallen under 50%. So he actually came out ahead, but because he didn't cross that threshold, it forced him into a runoff along with the Kelly Loeffler, Raphael Warnock race. And so, you know, we'll see what happens the next several weeks. Governor Kemp has a lot of money. I think they just reported yesterday that they raised $2.5 million since our legislative session ended in early April. So just within the last 3.5 weeks, they raised $2.5 million. We can't raise money. Candidates can't raise money during the legislative session, or if you're serving, elected officials can't. I don't know how much David Perdue raised. The first disclosure showed there was a dramatic difference. I think David had $2 million and Kemp had $10.5 million. And now we just learned that, you know, Governor Kemp raised another $2.5 million. And that's not counting outside groups. President Trump has spent some money on behalf of David Perdue. He came in and did a rally for him. He did a tele-rally for him earlier this week. But it doesn't seem to be moving the needle much. Having watched politics for many years, I think the race will close. It won't. There won't be a 20% gap. The question is, will it close enough to push, you know, Governor Kemp under the 50% threshold? So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I remember that with Senator Perdue, you know, how he was leading and it went from, I'm going to make this up, like 53% to 52% to 51% and drop. And was there any, I mean, was it the former president, was he the reason encouraging Perdue to get into this race and why didn't, and is that why he didn't run for the U.S. Senate again?
Yeah, well, you know, Herschel Walker announced that he was running for the U.S. Senate early on. And, you know, President Trump has a relationship with Herschel Walker that even predates politics. I think Herschel Walker played for his football team.
Right.
And so I think when Herschel Walker got in the race, it became apparent that, you know, he was going to have the support of the former president, and he is a, you know, celebrity candidate. And so I don't think that Senator Perdue or David wanted to, you know, take him on. Mm-hmm. And so I think that President Trump has had an issue with Governor Kemp. He criticized him when he opened the state early, you know, during COVID. He criticized, you know, he had a candidate he wanted the governor to appoint to the open Senate seat when Senator Isaacson retired, and Governor Kemp appointed Senator Loeffler. And then, you know, he wanted the governor to call a special session to relitigate the 2020 election, and Governor Kemp didn't. So I think President Trump has made it perfectly clear that he had issues with Governor Kemp and was on a mission to find the candidate to run against him. And I might add, he's not only gotten behind David Perdue, he has endorsed candidates in every state constitutional office. Our sitting Attorney General, Chris Carr, who is just a tremendous public servant and has been, you know, he was a former commissioner of economic development, chief of staff to Senator Johnny Isaacson for a number of years. He has a Trump-endorsed challenger because President Trump didn't think he did enough with, you know, challenging the 2020 election. And then, of course, our Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, who, you know, was involved in that telephone call that we've now heard, which there's actually a grand jury, you know, looking at the matter right now in Georgia, you know, where President Trump asked him to just find 11,000 plus votes. That's all I need. He has a Trump-endorsed challenger, sitting Congressman Jody Heiss. So there's a whole Trump slate, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I'm going to be interested to see what happens in the Pennsylvania race. I think that's next week. I was interested in the Ohio race. I mean, J.D. Vance did win, but I go back to the fact that they only had a 30% threshold. I mean, there's no doubt that President Trump is still a very popular figure in Georgia among Republican voters, but so is Governor Kemp. And I think that there's probably a segment of the Republican primary electorate, I would say high 20s, maybe it's as much as 30, that will do what President Trump advises them to do in terms of voting. So that's why he has a slate of candidates. But I think that the remainder of the electorate, whether it's 70% or 80% of Republican primary voters, I think that they'll make up their own mind, and they're going to look at the record of the candidates. And I think that's why Governor Kemp is likely, why he's doing well in the polls and will likely prevail in the end.
And so the only issue really, not the only issue, but assuming he wins, the issue is, does he get 50% plus one?
Yeah, I think that, like, that would be, that would be the big issue. And then, and then we have to see what happens in the general election. I think probably the big unifier for Republicans is Stacey Abrams being the Democratic nominee. Mm-hmm. I've always felt that way. I didn't buy into, you know, the argument that the party's fractured and they're not going to turn out and vote, because I think Stacey Abrams will turn out voters on both sides. I think that she'll energize the Democratic base, but I think the Republicans will be unified. And I'm hoping that because President Trump is such a strong supporter of Herschel Walker, who will be the likely Senate nominee, that he will realize if he tries to, if Governor Kemp is the nominee, and if he continues to try and you know, discredit him or work against him, that that will impact Herschel Walker. And if the motivation is really to get that Senate seat back and change the makeup of the United States Senate, I hope the Republicans will be unified. I'm convinced we lost the two Republican Senate seats in the runoff because of the former president, because he was so focused on relitigating 2020 and trying to change the results of his election that he wasn't focused on trying to get these two, you know, senators reelected. And he turned off voters. He put doubt in people's minds about the voting system, that people stayed home. And the Democrats did everything right, and we're all energized. And that's why two Democratic senators were elected. Interestingly enough, when President Trump came to Georgia during the Senate runoff races in 2020, he went to two parts of the state. He went to Valdosta, Georgia, which is in southeast Georgia, and he went up to Dalton, I think it was Dalton, which is in northwest Georgia. Those two counties had a lower turnout in voting for the runoff. And it's because when the former president went to do rallies there, he spent most of his time talking about the 2020 election and how there was corruption. And so I just hope that we can get beyond talking about 2020 and not convey to voters that there are issues with the voting system. You know, one thing I didn't mention too, with regard, we were talking about the legislature. One of the other things that happened after the 2020 election, and then also this last legislative session, is we passed voting reform legislation. The governor really advocated for that to tighten up some of the issues that were raised in the 2020 election. So voters should feel a lot more confident in the integrity of the elections this time around, because some of the issues that were raised, I think we have come up with remedies to make sure some of those problems don't happen again.
Well, it's interesting what you said earlier about not appointing to the U.S. Senate who the former president favored. And it just made me, and some of the other things you mentioned, at some point, even before the presidential election, it seemed as if there were, Kemp was not, he was losing favor with the former president. And then the election and the fraud allegations and all that just put it over the top.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing too about that, Jim, that's a good observation. But one thing I will say about Brian Kemp is, even though the former president didn't like him, Brian Kemp never wavered from his support for the president.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I went to events and that he was at on behalf of the president, talking up the president. I mean, he agreed in the president's policy.
And David Perdue.
Yeah. Exactly. Both of them.
It's a tough business.
It sure is. It sure is.
If you want a friend, get a dog. Is that the famous Lyndon Johnson or somebody? So from someone outside of Georgia, watching how supportive Kemp was of the president and people like Perdue, it is very fascinating to watch. And so we will keep an eye on that and see if Governor Kemp wins 50% plus one. When is the runoff?
I want to say it's either 3 or 6 weeks later.
Okay.
I think it's 3 weeks later.
Okay. And so the primary ends May 24th. And if there's a runoff, it's 3 to 6 weeks later after that. And then the winner would face Stacey Abrams in November.
Yes.
And right now, the perception is, and obviously it is really early, and this can change. For instance, if it was Governor Kemp versus Stacey Abrams, that Governor Kemp has the edge.
I would say so. By the way, June 21st is the runoff date.
Okay. Thank you. June 21st. Okay.
I do think, look, you know, and this has come up in the campaign, Governor Kemp beat Stacey Abrams. He's the only one that has won. Stacey Abrams lost her race, and David Perdue lost to John Ossoff.
Right,
Governor
right.
Kemp is the one who won, and he beat Stacey once before.
Right.
I think the national climate is going to impact races all across the country. As everyone knows, history shows in a midterm election, after a president gets elected, the opposite party does well just normally. But then you factor in some of the dynamics we're dealing with in the country with inflation and some of the issues in the early days of the Biden administration. You know, I just think if you look at the president's popularity, he's hovering at around 40% approval rating. That's not very good. And the only time I think in my lifetime that I've seen a midterm election actually do the opposite was in 2002, after George W. Bush got elected and we had 9/11. And he was still popular in the 2002 election because of the way he led the country after 9/11. But other than that, I mean, there's always been these big swings. And so I think, Republicans are likely going to take the House. I think there's a good possibility they'll take the Senate. And so I think here in Georgia, we're going to be impacted by that, and especially a conservative state. And what's become more and more apparent too to me, Jim, is that Republicans have won the state of Georgia in the presidential race for the last 30 years, with the exception of Bill Clinton. But that's because you have Ross Perot in the race. And he took votes away from George H.W. Bush. But we're still a right of center state. And I think what happened in the last election was not that Georgia voted for Joe Biden. It was that they voted against Donald Trump. Donald Trump lost the election in the suburbs and the city and the Atlanta suburbs and with women and, you know, minority groups. And I think that, you know, if you look at who else won in 2020, with the exception of the Senate races, which went into a runoff, Republicans, you know, did well. And so I don't think that there's been a shift as much politically in the state. So I think that given we're a right of center state, given the historical trends, given the national climate, I think Republicans are favored, and I think Governor Kemp will be favored. The one caveat, I don't know what this recent, you know, leak of the Supreme Court decision, you know, that would, in a state like Georgia, that will cut both ways. I could see that really energizing social conservatives, just like it will energize not just pro-choice women. I mean, that's one that I'm not, you know, sure in a state like Georgia that's right of center. I mean, even though there have been polls that have said people think that Roe versus Wade needs to stay. I mean, I've seen polls as recent as, you know, 6 months ago when the Mississippi case was front and center. I don't know how that will play out. And then the other unknown, too, is what happens in the Ukraine and with Russia. I mean, we've seen in history that foreign policy events can really, you know, change things on a dime. Politics is really interesting. I remember, and you probably remember this too, in the Gulf War. This is George H.W. Bush. You know, we successfully won the Gulf War. George H.W. Bush's popularity was
91%.
91%. And then he goes to China and gets the flu and throws up on the prime minister of Japan. And then Bill Clinton. Yeah. Because the economy's stupid. Yeah.
And none of the A-team on the Democratic side wanted to run against the incumbent president. And so Here's a Southern, you know, governor who people thought was very, very smart, but, you know, and even there's been some talk that even Clinton, like, this was kind of his first time, like he was just going to, you know, get warmed up. Next thing he knows, he's the nominee. And then you throw in Ross Perot. Yeah. Incredible. Well, you brought up the Roe v. Wade, the leaking of that decision. And I was going to ask you, and obviously none of us know the impact of it in these elections, really in November, but it's a huge question mark as to the impact it will have.
It's a huge question mark. And I was actually talking to the former Chief Justice of the Supreme Court here in Georgia last night. And the leak itself cannot be overlooked. And that really is a real problem. And it's going to question, you know, people are going to have questions about that in the future. And, you know, the Supreme Court's always been viewed in a different way. You know, it's a separate branch of government. And it almost seems so political for the Supreme Court to have done that. And it's not the justices. And so I can understand why the Chief Justice Roberts, and I'm sure the other justices too, are not happy that this has happened.
Yeah, I think unless one of the justices were involved, I think over time, my guess, I could be proven dead wrong, that will subside and the issue is going to be the actual ruling of the case. The change, but you're right. It's all over, that piece of it is all over the news. Well, let's not give a short change to Herschel Walker, which is known. He's known nationally, as you mentioned. He did at one point, I guess, technically was an employee of the former president. He played on, I think it was the New Jersey Generals in the USFL. Right. We all remember Herschel from his days playing for the Bulldogs. And last poll, I saw briefly, he was at 66%. So I think the primary is pretty much over. What's going on in that race, or how is that shaping up at all?
Yeah, I mean, he's a celebrity down here, obviously, because the University of Georgia is something that, you know, we all hear a lot about, and people have known of Herschel. He, you know, is raising a lot of money. He has to raise a lot of money because he's running against Raphael Warnock, who is probably the top fundraiser among Senate candidates. And I think he's already raised $25.6 million. There are four others in that Senate, Republican Senate primary, all really good guys. You know, our ag commissioner is in the race. There's a former state rep. There's a businessman who's former military. And then there's a gentleman named Latham Sadler, who is also a former Navy SEAL, actually worked in the Trump White House on the National Security Council, not in a political job, served in Afghanistan. So, I mean, there are some really good quality candidates, and I feel for them because, you know, they're running against this giant, larger than life celebrity in the primary. And so he hadn't participated in debates and forums. And, you know, he has, you know, been advised that, you know, let's just keep your powder dry. Let's get through the primary because we'll have plenty of debates and opportunities in the general election. I've had an opportunity to hear Herschel now several times on the stump. I've met with him several times. I think that, you know, he's philosophically grounded, and I think that he's going to mount a really, you know, good campaign. I think there's people that are underestimating him, and they don't think that he is going to be as strong a candidate in the general election. He's not as knowledgeable on some of the issues. And I would just tell people that they need to sort of take pause. I mean, Raphael Warnock is articulate. He's, you know, obviously a preacher, and he's been in the United States Senate now for a year and a half or 2 years. So he's knowledgeable about issues, but he now has a record, and his record is he has been, you know, basically following the national Democratic playbook. And as I said before, Georgia is a right of center state. And I think with the climate and Herschel Walker being, you know, grounded in conservative principles, I think that this is going to be a very competitive, spirited, lots of attention. And I think it's going to be a close race, but I do think that Herschel Walker is well positioned and will be a very viable candidate in November. I think when Mitch McConnell, you know, President Trump was on board for him, you saw a big shift when Mitch McConnell came out and endorsed him back in January or February, because what that did is it sort of brought two factions. I hate to sort of say we have factions, but it was almost a endorsement when Senator McConnell embraced him. And my understanding is they talk a lot, which is good because I think he's probably educating Herschel on, you know, issues that aren't in front of him every day like they are Senator McConnell. I think when Senator McConnell came on board for Herschel, it sent a signal to a lot of people that have been watching, saying, does this guy have what it takes to be a United States Senator? And he got the blessing of someone who's very well respected in certain circles. And so I think, you know, he's got the right coalition together. It's been interesting watching him with the governor's primary. I don't think he has sort of risen above it. So while the media has been very focused on Perdue versus Kemp and some of the down ballot races, Herschel's not gotten himself in the middle of the fray. And he also has this personal relationship with Trump that predates politics. And my understanding from talking to Herschel is he has no problem. He talks to Trump a lot and has no problem telling the former president, you know, what he thinks. And I think that, you know, if, you know, as I said before, we've got to be unified. And I think Herschel probably could have the most influence over the former president when Governor Kemp gets renominated or gets nominated, you know, to have a unified Walker-Kemp ticket.
You raise a very interesting point that there's this Kemp versus Perdue battle going on. and Herschel can just kind of quietly stay off to the side and give him time to get used to the political world, used to the environment, spend some time learning all the issues, working with Senator McConnell. It's really a perfect scenario for a celebrity candidate like Herschel Walker.
Yeah, had the gubernatorial primary not, had we not been dealing with this, then everything would have been focused on the Senate race. Right. I think Herschel probably would have not been able to escape debates, would have been asked by the media a whole lot more questions. And so it has really benefited him. Now, one thing I will say is that, you know, candidates hate this, but you become a better candidate when you're in a contest. And so a spirited contest will make you a stronger general election candidate. But, you know, not everyone is Herschel Walker.
That is very true. Well, Eric, it has been great to have you on. For our listeners out there, remember you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can also sign up for our email, which comes out every week, and you can do that at thepoliticallife.com. We hope you all have a great week. And Eric, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Take care, Jim.
See you now.